Hey, good evening, folks. Clay Novak here, flying solo once again for a second week in a row. Baby watch for Elsa, still no baby. She's been down there for a couple of weeks now, trying to be grandma for the third time over, and no luck. I think tomorrow may be the day. We've been saying that for a couple of weeks now, but tomorrow may be the day, and then we'll have her back in full next week. That's the hope. So. Thanks for being here with me alone this week, and I got a great show for you. A couple of good, deep, solid topics tonight. So we'll get started right after this. All right, starting off tonight, we've got the Rona McDaniel issue that's going on right now. For those of you that don't know, Rona McDaniel was the recently resigned and departed RNC chair. So you've got a heavy hitter from the Republican National Convention, from the party. And, you know, she was truthfully liked and respected by a lot of people. Most folks were not happy when she departed, but she moved on to, you know, to greener pastures, if that's what you want to call it. And one of the first places she got hired by was NBC Studios. And she was going to be their probably overreaching conservative pundit. They don't have many, if any, at all. So I have a feeling she was going to do a lot of duty across really probably multiple shows. That was announced 5 days ago. And today she has been fired. She hasn't even been on the air yet, but has been fired. And it's due to specific, there was a lot of backlash, some of it from NBC viewers, but a lot of it from NBC personalities and staff. So this is journalism today. And the two big names that come up when you hear about her firing and about the backlash of her hiring, which in turn led to her firing, are Rachel Maddow and Joe Scarborough from Morning Joe on MSNBC. So these are not people that Rona McDaniel was going to directly compete with. There was going to be no loss to them or their ratings. They just didn't want her on the network because she's a conservative. That's it. That's the whole premise. So they want the echo chamber to continue. They don't want any opposing viewpoints. They certainly don't want any opposing viewpoints with any kind of educated voice, and anybody with any sort of, reputation or you know, at least someone who has an earned reputation or respected reputation. To counter any of the messaging that they want brought across on their shows, right? So you've got Rachel Maddow, who truthfully is, you could probably throw journalism out the window and just call it sensationalism because that's all she does. If you go back and watch her, especially during COVID, you know, she was one of the you know, beat the drum, fear Nick, keep everybody in their houses. She all of the messaging that all of the scared everybody who was, you know, trying to put the fear mongering out in the world. She was front of the crowd, top of the list. She was definitely on board with all of it. Definitely the deliverer of all of those messages. I just zero journalism credibility, for me, because that's not what she does. She is definitely bought and paid for. She's liberal. The party, whatever the party needs, whatever the message is from the current, you know, liberal world, that's what she's offering. That's what she's pushing forward. Joe Scarborough is the same way. Morning Joe, you know, is pure echo chamber. That's all it is. And it is just another show to bring the message across of, you know, hey, this is what the president, this is what the administration, this is what the party wants you to know. This is what they want you to hear. This is what they want you to believe. So this is the message we are going to deliver. Now, I know there were others. I know there were others at NBC, MSNBC, all the affiliates. I know that there was some backlash from viewers. I get it. you know, but NBC does have an obligation as a news source, trying to be a legitimate source of non-biased, non-partisan, quality news to offer, you know, a differing viewpoint. And that's what Rona McDaniel was hired for. Former RNC chair, right? Who better to offer a conservative counter viewpoint to on any of these shows, on any of their normal viewing? Why wouldn't you have Rona McDaniel in your bullpen? Well, because she offers an opposing viewpoint, and that's not what they want. That's not modern, you know, journalism. I use that term very, very loosely, right? They're nothing more than pundits. They're the, listen, I'm not a journalist. Elsa's not a journalist. We're pundits, right? This is what we do. We offer our opinion. We offer our viewpoint. We offer a differing viewpoint. Okay. MSNBC, NBC, when you talk about news and delivering news and news networks, it's not supposed to be punditry. And those that are pundits and readily acknowledge that they're pundits, fine. You can have that on those networks and even have dedicated shows on those networks. But you can't call yourself a journalist and then absolutely put the hammer down on an opposing viewpoint to make sure it doesn't even get exposed on the same network as you, probably not even on your show. So Rachel Maddow, if she had any respect for herself as a journalist at all, never would have opened her mouth about this. If she had any belief in her own ability as a journalist to deliver a message that she believes in, something that she believes to be true and factual and that is defensible, not only would she have not pushed to have Rona McDaniel off the network, she would have invited her on her show. She would have brought her on and went point counterpoint. If she was smart, Rachel Maddow, by the way, if she was smart and she had the ability, clearly doesn't, she would have made it a weekly segment. If she had any brains whatsoever, she would have dedicated a 10-minute tete-a-tete, you know, with Rona McDaniel. Pick a topic every week, 10 minutes. Two of them go at it. They spend 10 minutes yelling at each other. Rona McDaniel walks away. Rachel Maddow's got the other 50 minutes. Like, that's free money. That's free viewership every week. You're drawing in conservative viewers, even for a 10-minute argument every week. But she doesn't have the ability. She doesn't have the faith in her own capability. And so what she wanted was Rona McDaniel gone. Not on her show, not on the same network umbrella. I mean, she's on MSNBC. Rona McDaniel, I think, was going to be more, you know, nightly news or, you know, mainstream media, NBC, Peacock, you know, big channel kind of stuff. Maybe not. Maybe she bumped into MSNBC on occasion, but Maddow didn't even want her to do that. Didn't want her around. Neither did Joe Scarborough, because they can't manage it. They're not quality journalists. They gave up on journalism a long time ago. Truthfully, they take whatever's handed to them, you know, the script that's put in front of them. And, you know, I won't say they're Ron Burgundy, but it's pretty damn close. You know, they don't, you know, they try and offer a viewpoint, and they try and offer themselves as a news source, but, you know, the news that they're delivering is not non-biased. It's very, very biased. And, you know, Rachel Maddow is as much a pundit as she is anything else. And again, if that's who you're going to be, then be that person. Be a pundit. And oh, by the way, if you're a pundit, you can always bring people on too to offer an opposing viewpoint. You know, there's a difference between someone who offers opposing viewpoints, because I get them too on social media. I get them, you know, I'll post something. Somebody will offer an opposing viewpoint. And I truthfully have. There's been a handful of people actually who are personal friends of mine over the years that I have literally cut away and blocked. And it's not because I don't value their opinion. It's the way that they deliver their opinion and the way that they don't provide any new content. All they do is sit around and wait for me to post something and then offer a counterpoint. Nothing original, nothing. They're just there to argue. That's not productive. But that's not, you know, Rona McDaniel was there to offer an educated, informed counter opinion to 99% of what's going on NBC and MSNBC. That's what they hired her for. But their big names didn't like it. So they fired her. 5 days. 5 days. I don't even think she got on the air. I mean, that's really, really shameful that they are that bothered by an opposing viewpoint, or that afraid of an opposing viewpoint, or that afraid of having to defend their own position that they know against somebody who's a pretty friggin' smart lady, they may not be able to do. So what was their recourse? Get rid of her. Fire her. If you don't fire her, I'm leaving. That was the threat from the big names. Get rid of her. We don't want her here. If you don't get rid of her, it's me or her. You know, they're paying Rachel Maddow a lot of money, a lot of money. And I'm sure there's a nice golden parachute separation clause in her contract. If I remember right, she took like a year off. And there was a whole bunch of failed attempts to fill her time slot because it was cheaper to just let her take the year off and fail than it was to get rid of her and bring somebody else in. So, you know, bad negotiation by NBC. They gave her all this power, and now, you know, what do you expect? She's going to use it. But she doesn't like it. She doesn't like Rona McDaniel. She doesn't like having her around. She doesn't like that opposing, educated, informed viewpoint. So fire her. I don't like her. Get rid of her. Right? It's very, very, you know, sixth grade gym class. You know, that mean girl over there, get rid of her. Let's start a rumor. Let's make her look bad. Whatever it is, it's very childish. It's definitely not professional, and it sure as shit is not journalism. Good journalists can you know, hold their own in an arena with somebody else with an opposing viewpoint. Rona McDaniel was supposed to be that opposing viewpoint, and instead of going toe-to-toe with her, Joe Scarborough or Rachel Maddow, their solution was get rid of her. Just get rid of her. I don't even want to deal with her. Don't want to see her. Don't want to hear. Get rid of her. So that's where our media is at, folks. And you wonder why. That's the most blatant display of one-sided, single party, you know, lack of fair and balanced journalism I've seen in a long time. And listen, all the networks are guilty of it. Don't get me wrong. You know, all of them. Okay. Fox is not immune either. I know we've got probably a pretty heavy Fox base of listeners and viewers, but the reality is Fox shows their side too. But every one of those networks, there's very few, we've talked about this before, very few quality journalists out there, but this is blatant. This is the most blatant thing I've seen in a while. And you know, NBC caved. They did. Weak sauce, just caved and let it go. They fired her. I hope Rona McDaniel gets a huge settlement out of this. Huge settlement. And I hope another one of the liberal networks turns around and picks her up. Whoever, CNN, Headline News, ABC, whatever. I don't care. I think it'd be hilarious if she got both the money and another gig, which I'm sure she probably will. If NBC saw enough in her to offer a contract in the first place, somebody else will see the same. So good luck to her. I hope she comes out of this well. I'm sure she will. Shame on Rachel Maddow and Joe Scarborough. Very weak. You should as journalists, you really need to take a good solid look in the mirror and decide who you are and what you're going to be, because journalism ain't it. Not if you're afraid of this. So we'll see what happens with Rona. See where she ends up. We'll see if NBC makes another failed effort to bring on a semi conservative voice, and we'll see what the reaction is if they try that mess again. As long as, you know, Rachel Maddow and Joe Scarborough around, and they have the voice they have, so we'll see what happens. Moving on, next topic is something that, you know, Elsa and I don't cover. We hit on the fringes. You know, we've said this before. There's a couple of issues in the United States that are absolute dividers, 100%, and they are abortion and gun laws, Second Amendment. Those two things, you can draw a line. People are definitely one side or the other. And they are two sensitive topics for a lot of very good reasons. And there's no clear alignment, in my opinion, on where people will fall in these things. I've met people that, you know, you would assume are super conservative and are pro-choice. And I've met people who are super liberal, who are definitely pro Second Amendment. So it's not a clear cut and dry thing. But what we're seeing now, and really in the very recent past few weeks, so there's a constant, right? This administration has been talking about an assault weapons ban since the election. Okay. Now, we can go down the line. We can go through the vocabulary. You know, people have a problem with the term assault weapon because it doesn't mean anything. You know, what is an assault weapon? Define it and all this other thing. And assault is a verb. And I don't get hung up on that stuff. It is to me personally, it's a phrase in common use. And, you know, it's kind of like Scrabble. People use it all the time. You know, if you tell me what, you know, if you use the word assault weapon, I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about. And generally referred to as most of the AR, you know, AR-15 platforms or something that looks like an AR-15 or something that looks like an AK-47. Those are about 95% of what people are referring to when they say assault weapons. Civilian version, of course. But the administration has been talking about an assault weapons ban and a high capacity magazine ban since, you know, the election, since last election. And that's not going away. They've been pushing for that, and they push for it legally. They push for it in all sorts of illegal ways. When I say illegal, like non-procedurally, you know, the ATF does things outside of its bounds and has been put in check a couple of times by multiple levels of appeals court and Supreme Court. You know, just for all of you that know, the ATF doesn't make laws. They like to think that they do, but they don't make laws. And when they start restricting Second Amendment rights by directives and determinations and other things, they're essentially trying to alter the law, which they don't have the authority to do. Regardless, that's one of the ways that the administration is trying to fight against assault weapons and high capacity magazines. Now, recently, we also had a federal judge who determined that it is okay for illegal immigrants to purchase a gun in the United States. Now, I will tell you, I'm a gun owner. And I purchased my fair share, that every time that you go and you go for that federal background check that is required whenever you buy from a licensed gun dealer, for people who believe that you can just walk into a Walmart and buy a gun, turn around and walk out, you know, with no background check or whatever, that's not true. That doesn't happen. You buy from any licensed gun dealer, okay, and you follow the law it's supposed to be followed, you have to fill out and request a federal background check. Happens for everybody. Okay. And it doesn't matter. If I buy a gun today, I got to go and apply for it for the background check. If I go back 48 hours later to buy another gun, got to do it again. And oh, by the way, if they put in the background check, it's only good for so many hours for you to actually purchase the gun before they've got to do it again, because things happen, right? You can commit a crime within, you know, X amount of hours. So there are checks and balances in place. Regardless, there are a number of questions you have to fill out on that background check. And most of them fall in section 11 of the form. There's a number of questions, you know, are you currently, you know, evading the law? Do you use, you know, drugs? Do you have mental health issues? Have you ever been incarcerated? There's a bunch of things on there. 11K. Right. Question 11K is, are you in the United States illegally? If you check yes to that, it's an automatic denial, not allowed to purchase a firearm. That's on the federal background check form from the ATF. Okay. The federal government and the ATF, who everybody likes to say, you know, whoever the anti-gun side keep saying is, you know, they get to set up whatever they want. Just like I said, the ATF doesn't set up the laws, but they do have a lot of power in who gets to purchase weapons and what type, right? And then that flows into law. And the background check is part of that. But this federal judge just determined that that is no longer relevant. That specific question is no longer relevant. Well, if you're here illegally, it doesn't matter. You should still be able to own a gun. So what differentiates that felony, because it's a felony, what differentiates that felony from any other felony? Right? If you are currently pending charges or on the run from the law, which I think is like 11A, if you're here illegally, it's the same thing. You are currently on the run from the law. If you're here illegally, you are currently on the run from the law. So you've got to check yes to that too. Regardless, this federal judge determined that we have a check in place that, whether people like it or not, is followed for every gun purchase from every licensed gun dealer in the United States, right? We all fill out the form. It all goes through the national database. We all get checked out. And that question right there, the judge determined is irrelevant. So now what that federal judge has done, whether, if I remember correctly, it was a woman, whether she likes it or not, she has now put that entire form under scrutiny. Because the entire 2A community, Second Amendment supporting community, turns around and says, well, why is that okay? What? Why is that okay? If they can do it, why can't I do it? Just because I was a felon before, why can't I still own a gun? I wasn't a violent criminal, blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's the whole form is now under scrutiny, okay? Which, you know, there's a lot of good and bad in that. But I don't think the federal judge, you know, I don't think this was the outcome she was looking for. Regardless, Vice President Harris, who is the gun czar, we talked about her being the border czar last week. The gun czar, who heads up the Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Again, another tag that they threw on her that she hasn't done anything with. She was at, I think, Stoneman High School, site of a previous school shooting, which is always a tragedy. And I don't say that offhandedly. It really is a horrible thing, where she made an announcement of a couple of things. The bipartisan, this is in a white, you can go to whitehouse.gov and find this, but it's an announcement about the Bipartisan Safer Community Act, which, truthfully, if you look at the words that are written, is nothing. It's very much there to just appease the masses. It looks like something's being done, but when you get into the nuts and bolts of it, it's actually very, very hollow and doesn't do anything. The second part, though, of that, the second part of the announcement is, and I want to make sure I get the wording on this right, it is the announcement of the Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center. Now, I'm going to read that again. Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center. So what's that about? That's about red flag laws. For those of you who don't know what red flag laws are, these are very contentious. Not every state has them. And truthfully, I'm wholly against them. Red flag laws, and I'm wholly against them because they're going to be exploited. That's why. Red flag laws are when a family member and or friend can express concern to the local law enforcement agency about the mental health status of an individual. Now, they can temporarily and then eventually permanently take away the guns from the person. Now, that doesn't address if there is a significant mental health issue with the individual. That doesn't address that. It just addresses the guns, right? And that's the problem. Listen, if there's somebody who has mental health issues and they have access to guns, then yes, for the love of God, separate those two, okay? But get the person help. It's not about, you know, well, I think there's something a little off about Mr. Smith. And I know he has guns in his house. Well, the police come over. They say, Mr. Smith, we're here to take your guns. And they take his guns. But they leave Mr. Smith, who's mentally unstable, in his house. They're not doing anything for Mr. Smith. They're just taking his guns away. Okay. And this is why I say I'm not a fan of these, because they're going to be exploited. Right. So there's a short term where they can go and take the guns. And then they talk to a judge, and the judge says, yes, we need to permanently remove those for whatever reasons. And there's a proceeding and, you know, all these other things. But it's based on the opinion of a friend or family member who has zero, you know, not required to have any kind of medical background or anything else. You know, could be anybody, could be some guy's ex-wife or some lady's ex-husband, right? You know, there could be some woman out there. I hate to say this, but this is how people think. There could be a woman out there who has a gun in her house to protect herself from a former abusive boyfriend. Right? It doesn't take but a couple of phone calls to the police department to say, hey, I think, you know, Miss Smith over there, you know, she's got a gun. She's acting a little weird. I think she's been known to use drugs, and I know she's associated with so-and-so, all fabricated, right? And then the next thing you know, the police come over and, you know, they decide there's enough evidence there that they're going to take her gun away from her. And now she's got no protection from some guy who's potentially going to abuse her physically, mentally, sexually, whatever. You know, this can be used to exploit old people. This could be used for a number of nefarious reasons. That by the time it's over with, by the time it gets sorted out, it's too late, right? Criminals only need small windows to do things. If they can get guns out of a house, leave someone without self-protection for long enough, they can do what they want to do. It doesn't take much, day, 24 hours, 12 hours, whatever they need. And there are plenty of police departments out there that are way too eager to support and enact these things. Now, there's plenty of them that aren't, don't get me wrong. But there are plenty that are, okay? I'm not a fan of the red flag law. But what we've got now is a federal agency which has no power whatsoever. Keep that in mind. Federal agency, the Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center, that is supposed to be there to help law enforcement agencies, families, lawyers, whoever else needs to use red flag laws. Right. So you have red flag laws. Now you've got a federal resource center that shows you how to maximize red flag laws. And this falls under Department of Justice. So this is about getting red flag laws enacted in places where they don't have any. This is about getting red flag laws maximized in their use, so that local law enforcement and then eventually other types of law enforcement get involved and have the backing to take more guns away from more citizens. This is all part of the gun grab campaign that goes on with this administration. That's what it's about. And never let them convince you that it is about anyone's safety. Because it's not. They will hide behind that every day. They will convince you that's what it's about every single day. This is about population control, and it always will be. You'll never convince me otherwise. Sorry. I'm a proud gun owner. Always have been. Always will be. You'll never change my mind. I have seen and been around and worked inside of populations where people didn't have the ability to defend themselves, and I've seen the aftermath. And let me tell you something. There's a whole bunch of women in Afghanistan right now that really, really wish that they could defend themselves from their own government. And don't say our government's any different, because every government's the same. It's all about power. Okay. So yes, our government is eventually capable of something that nefarious. It is. Okay. We put Japanese in prison camps in the 40s. Okay. Wasn't that long ago. All right. We've done some pretty horrible stuff. It's not like we're not capable of doing it again. So, not a supporter of any of this. But it is about the overall campaign, the Second Amendment campaign, anti-Second Amendment campaign from the federal government, and really, and this administration particularly, and really that all the blue administrations, all the Democratic administrations are the same. This is what they're about. This is one of their main goals, is to disarm the population. So what can you do? You know, if you're an owner, even if you're not, exercise your Second Amendment rights on a regular basis. I try to, but I say this wholeheartedly and all completely honestly, if you own a gun, you should be trained to use it. So I'm not saying go out and buy a gun just to have a gun. Go out and be a responsible gun owner. Get trained on how to use it. If you have one in your house, you should know how to use it, and when to use it and all those things. But go out and do it. And if you have never done it, find somebody who does. There are plenty of places that give classes. I'm sure you have a friend, whether you know it or not, who is a gun owner and will happily take you out shooting. We're everywhere. There's tons of us. So it's an important individual right that I think we are too quickly ready to wash away and get rid of, because we're being sold that it's everybody's safety issue, and it's really not. So anyway, exercise that right. Don't let this administration keep passing things without actually going through Congress and establishing laws as they like to do. And keep an eye out. There's a lot of places you can find this information. Google it. It's pretty much that easy. But yeah, so keep an eye on that. You know, again, a new. Oh, by the way, those are also your federal tax dollars being spent on something else. The Extreme Risk Protection Order Resource Center. I think they're calling it the ERPO. ERPO, yeah. Keep your eyes out for it. Again, it was mixed in some word salad from the current vice president. All right, like many of you, I woke up this morning to some horrible news. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, I-695 in Maryland, hit by an Indonesian container ship. I think it was Indonesian container ship. Hit one of the bridge pilings and dropped the whole thing. There are no fatality numbers that I know of right now, and this is, you know, 12, 14, 16 hours later. No confirmed casualties, but I know there's people in the water that they're still looking for. The estimates early this morning were somewhere around 20. They accounted for the entire crew of the ship. And you know, it's just horrible. Now, in the immediacy, there's been the conspiracy theories abound, truthfully. It's been crazy. There's already people out there. You know, look, they're replaying the footage. And, you know, I saw somebody that's trying to say there were explosive charges here. You could see, you know, he's pointing it out on all of the bridges, and you could see flashes across the top as the ship impacted it. And the people were trying to track the route of the ship. And why did it make a right-hand turn really hard? And it went right for the bridge pylon. And, you know, the initial explanation, and you can see it in the film footage, is it lost power. It lost power a couple of times, and there was a mechanical failure in the rudder. Listen, I am truthfully, in most cases, an Occam's razor kind of guy. Whatever is the most likely explanation is probably the truth. I don't subscribe to a lot of conspiracy theories, and this is one I'm not buying into. I think this one is appears to be an accident, truthfully. And I, you know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But, and God, I hope I'm not. But this is part of a trend, and the trend is that we've got some infrastructure and transportation issues in this country. Now, most organizations, when you start to have problems like this and you start to see trends like this, you go to the person at the head. And in this case, it's somebody in the cabinet, National Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who hasn't done jack shit for 3.5 years, truthfully. hasn't done a damn thing. This again falls on his plate. The guy who is a mayor of a mid-sized town, which only exists because of an amazing university and its supporting community. And truthfully, my understanding, he wasn't even a good mayor in South Bend. But this is, he's a Secretary of Transportation, right? This is falls on him. Dual hat. Two issues. You've got a shipping issue and then you've got a road transportation issue, right? The 695 bridge is going to be done. It's 2 years minimum to get that thing back up and running again. Guaranteed 2 years, not to mention the cleanup in the river to make it passable by ships, right? That's going to take a while too. They're going to have to clean out one of the lanes between the pylons, right? So you can get container ships or whatever shipping through there. This is a significant thing. Okay. But it's a trend. So we've got the bridge impact and collapse. So now you've got slowed shipping through there, if not stopped shipping, plus you've got an entire, road route trucking network bypass around Baltimore that's affected. We've had multiple rail crashes, derailments across the country, all over the place, all year long, or all administration long, really for the last probably 7 or 8 years long. Okay. And that's an infrastructure issue. That's an operator issue in some cases, right? Too fast. Didn't slow down. I haven't heard that I remember of any of it being a maintenance issue with the railroads. Railroads are pretty good about that. But you've got rails that aren't being maintained. You've got, training that's not being maintained with crews. There's some pretty significant issues, but it's infrastructure, a lot of it. Now you've got, in the mix of this, you've got the airports. Airports and airlines and airplanes, three different things, right? Airports, I know specifically in Chicago, that's not the only place, but airports are being used to house migrants. Okay. There's a security risk, right? It's a security risk. So you've got that going on in airports. By the way, it takes away from the capability capacity of the airport anytime you overload it, whether it's for food, whether it's for water, whether it's for whatever. You're putting a strain on the airport itself, right? And the security issue on top of it. So that's an issue. You've got a lot of airports that are at capacity because airline travel continues to increase, and post COVID, it's just gone up and up and up and up and up, right? So you've got a lot of airports that are at or beyond capacity when it comes to flights, and they're maxed out and they're having a hard time keeping up. You've got airline problems, right? We've all seen the memes about, passengers being allowed to bring tools on board to flights now to help with in-flight maintenance and other things. I'm not going to name any airlines, but it used to be if there was an in-flight issue, that was like, hold the phone, stop the presses, the first thing on the nightly news, this airplane or aircraft or airline, they lost a piece of sheet metal off of a wing and the whole world stopped, right? That was big news. Happens all the time now. I mean, it's frightening how much in-flight, damage or, fires and, doors blown out and all kinds of other things that are going on, with these airplanes and airline. And then you got the Boeing issue. That's business. That's business practice. That's a lot of things. Okay. But there's some pretty significant impacts to the airline industry going on right now. And again, all fun falls under the transportation secretary, but it's all down to infrastructure. And what are we doing? Infrastructure is expensive to maintain, very expensive. So what are we doing? Right? What are we as a nation doing to maintain our ports, our airports, our major roadways, our major railways? What are we as a nation doing to maintain those things? And I'll tell you, everybody who drives, and I don't care where you live, if you drive, you know, there's some road construction crews out there that are busting their butt. I here in PA where I live, I give these guys a lot of credit because they do absolutely everything that they can to not disrupt normal morning, evening traffic. I'm not kidding. Like, there are whole sections of road that get repaired in the middle of the night. These guys work more night shift than any state I've ever lived in all the years I was in the military and moved around. They do most of their road construction at night, and God love them, because it's an amazing attempt to not disrupt things or minimize the disruption. So I give them a lot of credit. But that limits, you know, what you can do, when you can do it, those kinds of things. That also doesn't work, unfortunately, in, you know, major metro areas, right? Chicago, Washington, D.C., New York, Philadelphia, L.A., whatever. You can be doing road construction at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's still going to be busy, right? People are still driving around. So that, you know, there's only so much you can affect on that. But road construction is only part of it. You know, we've got the Eisenhower Interstate System, you know, which is a federal responsibility that I think the federal government has, you know, kind of, and I'm not an expert, but they've kind of, you know, their solution is to pay the states to do it, to fund the states to keep the interstate, you know, the national system up and running the way it's supposed to be. I think we probably, and I'm not for big government and I'm not for a lot of bureaucracy, but we probably need to be a little bit more proactive as a nation in, you know, maintaining those major roadways, right? The interstate system specifically. States can deal with their state roads. That's their issue. But the eyes, right? Wherever you live, you know, the north-south being the odds and the east-west being the evens. But we got to maintain those roads for everyone, for commerce, for travel, for transit, for tourism, for all of those things. Those have to be maintained. But My bigger concern, truthfully, is rail and seaport. Those are not things that get fixed quickly, easily overnight. There are also millions and millions and millions of miles of rail that human beings, other than the rail, you know, than the crews on the trains, they never see them, right? You just don't, because they're for cargo. They're freight line. Right. And so few people travel via train anymore in the United States. We don't know how bad the rail lines are unless it's a commuter train. I used to hop commuter trains all the time as a kid in Chicago. That was the best way to move around. But that's not everywhere. And oh, by the way, once you get outside of the general spider web of the Chicago area, there's not a lot of train travel going on. And even less now than there used to be. So we don't see it. We don't think about it until something bad happens. Okay. So, you know, and ports, seaports are another, like we can't survive well without those being maintained. So I think we as a nation need a little bit of a refocus on our infrastructure. I think we do need to do a little bit of refocus, reallocation, reapplication of our tax dollars applied appropriately to make sure that those are maintained. There are some things that are going to have to, you know, suffer accordingly. And I got to be honest with you, if it's the difference between some artist in, you know, Colorado getting a federal grant for $30,000 or, you know, fixing a section of rail that's going to maintain commerce and communications, the artist is going without. So, it's a matter of prioritization. We can't appease everybody. We got to prioritize. And there are things that need to go by the wayside to make sure that this country continues to roll and function the way that it should. And it has for the last, you know, few hundred years. So this, we need a better focus. And I'll lay this squarely on Pete Buttigieg, because I think he sucks. He's useless. There's never been an administration in my memory that needed an actual transportation secretary to be active and vocal and, you know, moving around and have these many things, these many plates spinning in the air as this administration has. And I've never seen a worse pick for a cabinet member than this guy. Like he's absolutely friggin' useless. So, you know, hopefully the next administration, whoever it ends up being, takes a good hard look at the transportation and puts some effort into it and puts somebody in there who can really, really jump in and fix some things. Cause those are things we can't let go. Like, we can't let that continue to disintegrate and devolve and land in disrepair. We as a nation would be completely screwed if we let this continue down the path that it's going down. So that's another focus. Just keep an eye on the trend. It's concerning to me. I've connected some dots there, and you know, maybe you have too. And there's probably some stuff that I'm missing, but I think in the general terms, we do have to put some focus back on that. Okay. All right. Last topic, and this is you know, usually, folks, I try to bring something to the table that's informational, educational. I try to, you know, I put my own 2 cents in. I think that's why you guys come here, is to listen to me and Elsa and what we have to say. And I try to offer a solution or at least some sort of visibility or something along those lines. This is something that I honestly don't have an answer for. We are in this, so please chime in. Chime in the comments. Contact me on the socials if you've got an idea. But this one's, I don't know what to do with this. We are in a persecution versus prosecution mindset nowadays. And let me kind of delineate the two, and you'll see where I'm going with this. So prosecution is legal, okay? You know, this country, one of our founding principles is innocent until proven guilty. Okay. Prosecution. So you go through the legal process based on facts and evidence, right? Brought against you or against someone else. It's procedural. And then there's a determination made based on laws and facts. Okay. It's pretty simple. Now, it does get a little dicey when we start to split between civil and criminal proceedings, because they're two very different things with very different vocabularies. And our media likes to manipulate those depending on the perception they want to have. Okay. Now, we can educate people on the prosecution side of our society right now, to include the civil versus criminal, right? Prime example, and I said this a couple of times a couple of weeks ago, President Trump was held liable, okay? Not guilty, liable for, and I'm trying, it's the E. Jean Carroll case, right? Sexual misconduct or, whatever it was, not a criminal charge, okay? Decades later, whatever, a civil case determined that he was liable for whatever she accused him of. That is not the same thing as criminal, okay? Our media likes to exploit the lack of knowledge, the lack of education of the American public, and make it seem like President Trump was convicted of a crime. He was not. Okay. Very important distinction. So there's that, right? That's the prosecution side. What we've got a predominance right now of is the persecution side. Okay. And I got like, I kind of wrote these down because I was trying to flesh this out in my own head. So this is in the court of opinion, persecution. Okay. Court of opinion played out in the media, not in any kind of courtroom. This is where cancel culture has come from. Okay. You know, there's little to no legal recourse or ramification associated with this when you get it wrong. And it thrives on, not just takes advantage of it, thrives on a lack of education. A couple of examples. Stephen Colbert, not a fan. I think the guy's a jackass. He, a few weeks ago, decided that he was going to offer that there were some less than wholesome things going on in the royal family, that there was an affair going on between Prince William and another woman and Princess Kate and all this other stuff. And yeah, turns out Princess Kate has cancer. And there's been a couple of medical procedures and there's some other things going on, right? So because it was salacious, because it sounded good, because he knew it would draw in viewers, he decided to make some horrible comments about a, you know, for as far as all of us know, a very functional and loving family, who's truthfully probably the cleanest part of the royal family's had in generations. And he decided to, you know, talk shit about her. Horrible. No record. He did get a stern letter from her lawyers, a cease and desist. And he apologized on air, but there's no ramification to that, right? Court of public opinion. That's what he decided to do. He just decided to make up something, or he decided to take a rumor that he heard and, you know, publish it all over the place. Just a shitty thing to do. This goes on all the time. It's going on today, right? Sean Puff Daddy Diddy Combs, right? P. Diddy, whatever he is. Two homes raided, right? Department of Homeland Security. Okay. The word was human trafficking. That was it. Immediately, all over the internet. People who don't know Jack, they don't know why, they don't know what. Memes everywhere. Sean Combs, Diddy, that guy's going to have a rough time for the next few years, because no one is going to remember why. If nothing else happens in this, they raided his home, they got whatever they were looking for, they didn't get whatever they were looking for, there's going to be no apology from DHS, whatever agency kicked his front door in. There's going to be no apology from them. Nothing. And you know, but the memes are already out there. They're already out there. People are already making assumptions. They're already saying things. They're already equating him to Epstein, Epstein's Island, you know, all kinds of stuff. And there's going to be no legal recourse. And let me tell you, that guy's got the cash to go after somebody if he chooses to. But there's so much of it. And as soon as it hits the social media, the internet, there's too many people out there. And everybody runs with it. And it gets crazy and out of control. All right? And there's tons of this going on. Tons of it. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. Okay? Everybody is subject to this nowadays. Because we are no longer, you know, the nation of innocent until proven guilty. None. We go after people, and then, you know, well, my bad, sorry, no big deal, right? You might, you know, you ruin somebody's life doing this stuff, but nobody cares, and it's this, right? It's our desire, it's our need as a nation and as humanity, to move information like that around, to say things that, you know, everybody's a keyboard warrior, and they say things and they do things and they make, you know, claims and they make accusations and all this stuff there's no recourse. There's nothing to hold them back. There's nothing to stop them. And so we are now a nation of prosecution or persecution. And I would tell you that we've gone more to the persecution than anything else. And we do, it's not just people we go after, it's topics. It's, you know, there are so many people who don't know jack about what's going on in Gaza and you know, Hamas-Israel war that's going on. There's so many people who don't know shit. All they know is what they're told on the news, what they find on the internet. 90% of it's a lie. And they believe they know the truth. So you know, they get online and they say things. Same thing, right? They're going after the president, or they're going after so-and-so, or they're going at, you know, they just, you know, everybody runs their mouth because there's no recourse. And again, so we're in the prosecution versus persecution, you know, kind of mindset. This is like Salem witch trials kind of stuff. Like those women, for as many as there were, and for as many years as that went on, they weren't witches. Like, witches aren't real. You know, we burned women alive, because we claimed that someone claimed that they were witches, right? That's what this is. And we're not burning people at the stake literally. But we're doing some pretty horrific things to some people, and there's no recourse. Very, very rarely does anything come out of this where, you know, it's there's punishment made, but we're ruining people's lives based on nothing other than our desire to do so. So I think we've got a pretty significant problem. And I'll be honest with you, folks, I said at the beginning of this, I don't know what the solution is. I really don't. It's all moved around by social media. That's the platform that, you know, that this thrives from. It's our lack of education in our kids. It's our lack of education as adults. It's a lack of discretion. It's a lack of mind your own business. It's all of that. And I don't know what the fix is, but I know that it is going to continue to tear this nation apart. It's going to continue to tear families apart, friend groups, friends in general, businesses. Everybody suffers because of this, but we can't help ourselves. And I don't know what the answer is. And I really, really wish I did, but it's something we all need to be aware of. You know, and it's something, truthfully, just if it doesn't affect you, don't hit forward, don't hit send, don't say, hey, did you hear? Like that, you're not helping things. If you don't know, shut your mouth. You know, who knows why DHS kicked in Puff Daddy's front door in two different houses today? Who knows? I don't know. You know, I heard the word on TV, human trafficking. That could be anything, truthfully. But who knows? So if you don't know, don't say, right? Don't talk out of turn. It's not your business. Mind your business. So, hey, listen, folks, that was a pretty quick hour. You know, I've been going on this for, you know, quite a few minutes now, but I appreciate you guys, you know, tuning in for another week. Had a good time last week. Great time again this week. It's Tuesday. Hopefully we'll know something by the time this show drops on Thursday. We'll know something from Elsa about, you know, grandma number three, grandbaby number three. I assume, crossing fingers and praying for her, that all is well and good with her and the family. And then we'll have her back next week. It'll be back, me and her, going at it. She'll bring more of the funny. I'm not good at bringing the funny, but that's she's good at that. That's why we love her. She makes us all laugh. So again, thanks for tuning in, and thanks for listening along. You can catch us on all the platforms, YouTube, live on Facebook every week. It's always fun for me to watch that, along with comments on YouTube. We're on Spotify, Rumble, and a couple of other places. And from Elsa, thanks for listening. She's very appreciative that you guys are tolerating me while she's gone. But also from me, as always, keep moving, keep shooting.